Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and turn them into podcast episodes. Oh my God, I completely went deranged there. We're coming to the end of the run. We take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. I've only said it, what, like 100, 200 times now. Anyway, you are listening to Calcutta Juno Dawson and final Calcutta Dylan B. Jones. Hi.
Hi. I clocked that bit of dialogue for the first time ever, I think, watching this. And I was like, that is so sexy. That is a quintessential Sex and the City dialogue, isn't it? Yeah,
they made her come from Calcutta just so they could have that line. And they made her a film editor from Calcutta just to have that line.
It's
so
very
specific.
It's very similar to Napa and take a Napa.
Very that, yeah.
Not funny. Yeah, we're a bit discombobulated today because it doesn't often happen to us. We had technical, or rather I had technical difficulties last night. My internet wasn't working. Virgin Media is officially cancelled. For being homophobic and transphobic and not letting us record our podcast. But yes, we're on, I would say, for most people, fair to say, this is probably top five, top three even episode, do you think, of all time?
Yeah, it's, in some ways, it stands apart from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
In that it's very much the beginning, really, of a three-part special that leads us into the finale. It's called Splat. If you're confused, that's the one we're watching and discussing.
And I completely agree with you. For the first time rewatching it this time, I was like, oh, it's very adjacent to the next two, and it could almost have been part un deux trois. It's very where, like, the what's the analogy that I want? Like a French analogy, the wheels are off the bicycle. the wheels are off the bicycle and there are baguettes flying everywhere as we're hurtling down the steps of Montmartre to Carrie's trip to Paris. It's happening.
It's all going on, which does mean that Dylan and I find ourselves in a slightly different predicament this week, as there isn't really plot lines for Samantha or Miranda this week.
Yeah.
Samantha basically has nothing to do, and Miranda's storyline is basically Carrie's storyline. So there's a little tiny, teeny bit of Charlotte we can discuss, but even that doesn't really kind of give us anything to get into. And the question, it feels like it was part of the bigger series mythology than it was actually the episode, which is it time to stop questioning?
Quite meta,
It's very meta, isn't it? Is it time for Carrie to shut the fuck up? Would be another way of that, in that she quits her job. all these questions that she has raised over the last 6 years. So God knows how Dylan and I are going to break this one down.
Shall I start with a sort of minimal potted synopsis?
Yeah, please do. Start with a little pop.
So as we've already said, and as everyone knows, this is kind of the start of the finale, really. Mm-hmm. Petrovsky gives Carrie an ultimatum. He's like, mm-hmm. move to Paris with me, or that's it. And we can get into the toxicity of that.
the whole episode is going to be about toxic relationships, yeah. basically.
And it basically, as we've said, hinges around that. I think we've had a couple of episodes like this, one or two, or I think maybe perhaps even just one, where major shit's been going on for Carrie and it's all sort of revolved around her. Maybe the... Yeah. Perhaps the Your Girl is Lovely Hubble episode was that end of season 3. I think maybe that was a bit like this.
End of two,
perhaps. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's mostly the ladies sort of rotating around, orbiting Carrie as she goes through this like huge life decision. There's a dinner at Petrovsky's where he meets all of her friends. And then there's, of course, the most memorable part of this episode, which is... The artists...
Lexi Featherston.
Yeah, I forget whose party it is. It's like some characters who I'm not sure we even meet. Unless she's the Calcutta one, the host.
Oh, I thought it was... I thought Enid was hosting, which is why she invites Carrie.
I think she says some friends of mine, some artist friends of mine are having a party.
Oh, I think she throws it for her artist
Oh,
friends.
She throws it for that. Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's Enid, yeah. Enid Frick is throwing a very sort of... Just artsy, pretentious soiree.
Cunty house party,
yeah. And we meet we meet New York party girl, Lexi Featherstone. And one of the most memorable scenes in television ever ensues. Oh, and as we said before, the only person who gets a little bit of plotline separate from Carrie and Petrovsky is Charlotte and Elizabeth Taylor. There's a significant moment for Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, but I mean, wonderful for Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
Very sweet. We'll come to that at the end, if there's time. Let's get into it. Let's break it down kind of scene by scene. We start with Carrie having an excruciating dinner party round Petrovsky's.
Yeah.
Where, do you know what really made me hate him in this? And it might not be the thing you're thinking of, given how many red flags there are in this episode. It's the fact that he hired waitstaff, but then cooked himself.
I noticed that as well.
Cunty.
That is ultimate cunty, isn't it?
And yeah, I can afford help, but I need to show you how good I am in the kitchen.
I can afford help, but I don't need help. That's like and it's interesting because he's toxic in many ways. Toxic mm-hmm. masculinity is one we haven't seen yet, but that's a proper toxic masculinity trait. I can afford help, but I don't need help. It made me wonder as well, how rich is he supposed to be? Like when I was looking at that gorgeous dining room and like the staff mm-hmm. like gliding, like he's obviously he must be a millionaire.
Oh God, I don't think that's in question. Yeah, yeah, I think he offers to pay for her apartment.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, you know, I think, let's be honest, Dylan, Sex and the City left reality some time ago. Yeah. I don't think we're dealing with normal people with normal incomes. And I think when you think that kind of, for all intents and purposes, kind of Petrovsky is like a mid-century artist. Mm. So he's really in that kind of the same category as people like Lichtenstein, Warhol, you know, people who made millions, David Hockney, people who made fortune.
I guess in terms of art being commercial, that was maybe like the mm-hmm. golden age, wasn't it? Like, and there are still some very successful commercial artists today, but stuff like you said, like Warhol, and we mentioned Jeff Koons a few episodes ago and mm-hmm. Damien Hirst, like those, they must have fucking cleaned up. Like, because all of that is like just iconic and so recognisable now. And everyone's got like
a print.
Well,
it's interesting. I was in the Pallant Gallery in Chichester a couple of weeks ago, and they have a Damien Hirst on display, and he had to donate it to British Arts Council because he didn't pay his taxes. So he had to
Damien.
Pay his taxes in art.
Or, and maybe that is art.
Maybe.
I'm
not going to pay. I'm not going to pay for your NHS, but here, have this painting for your gallery,
or have half a dissected shark.
It was butterflies in a picture frame, basically.
Oh, like those. Yeah, those are everywhere.
Don't even get me started on fucking Damien.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
No, who is? Tasteless. I'm happy to commit that to podcast as well.
Yeah, same. Yeah, that's another hill we can die on. Mm-hmm. What was the other one? Oh, yeah, circumcision, Damien Hirst. The two aren't that far removed. What was I going to say? Just another sign of how rich he is when the doorbell goes and he says, oh, the caviar.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Just awful. And so, yeah, so out of nowhere, while he's preparing his caviar, he drops on Carrie big style that he has to go to Paris for work. Carrie almost shits herself because history is repeating.
Yeah.
Ah, another boyfriend who hasn't told me they're moving to France.
Yeah.
But then, unlike Big, Petrovsky says, you should come with me because I want to go there. And you should come. Now, had he framed this as, Carrie, we need to talk. Obviously, you know that I have this exhibit in Paris. And, you know, I was thinking, because you're a freelancer and, you know, you work from home, how would you feel about coming to Paris for a while?
Yeah.
If it didn't interfere with your plans? But he doesn't say that. He says, let's go live in Paris forever. New York is done. I am done with New York.
What a child. Like, this man, how old is this man? And like, how...
100.
He's lived such a life, and then to be such a fucking child. Like, and also, like, it does not need to be... Why is he doing this? It does not need to be so be-all and end-all. Like, New York, these are both people who don't have conventional 9-to-5 jobs. They both work from home.
Yep.
They've both got a bit of money. If they want to do back and forth to New York for a bit, that would be fab. Like, why the fuck not? But he gives this ultimatum. He's sick of... And I think it's probably partly for the benefit of the plot and the viewers as well. There has to be this... It has to be an ultimatum, doesn't it? Like,
We haven't got time for him to be reasonable about this.
Yeah, and for the stakes to be raised, it has to be an ultimatum. Yeah, it has to be the decision, doesn't it, for her to make.
And I do feel in this episode that there's been hints of it before. By this episode, I don't think we're meant to sympathise with Petrovsky.
No.
I don't think we're meant to see what Carrie sees. And that is a real risk. I mean, presumably every last woman in the audience sided with Miranda.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I did. Carrie makes some points, which we'll get to later, but bold of Sex and the City to risk Carrie being likable. And they've done it before when she cheats on Aiden with Big, and I think that is bold. And you can see the conversation between Michael Patrick King and Sarah Jessica Parker saying it's okay that we are worried about Carrie, or we think Carrie is being stupid at the end of the episode, but maybe we're jumping the gun. Let's stay on her journey towards deciding, because everything that happens in this episode kind of pushes Carrie to the ultimate decision that she will go with Petrovsky.
So I loved the, as much as Petrovsky was an asshole at dinner, I loved the dinner scene. It was so much fun seeing everyone in this, seeing all the friends in the same place.
Yeah.
And it really captured when everyone meets someone's boyfriend or girlfriend or partner and they just don't fit in and don't get on with the group, and everyone's just a bit like, oh.
Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever had that?
To me, with one of my partners. Or just...
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever, introduced a partner and it just hasn't gone well?
Yes. Yeah, it was when... And it wasn't a serious one. It was when I was dating and I... It was when I was dating a much older man when I was, 19.
Interesting. Mine was an older man as well.
And
keep going.
So is Petrovsky. Interesting. And I remember he was like, so I was 19 and he was 40.
Sorry, I just got slapped in the face by a wet red flag, Dylan, but go on.
I took him to GAY late to meet all my friends, and he offered to get us all a drink and sort of was leading us through to the bar, and he was wearing a fleece. And one of my friends quite loudly said, I feel like I'm being led to the IT department. and I think,
why was he dressed like a dog walker in GOLA?
Well, he was American.
He was like an
American banker. Oh my god,
was this man your sugar daddy? Was he paying you to be there?
No, but he was the one, I've mentioned him before. He was the one who, it was literally like five or six dates. It lasted for like 2 months. But he was the one who, he was never like coercive or controlling in like a physical way. But he would take me out for all these lovely dinners and things. But he, I wasn't allowed to pick where. It was that thing. And that was in the end... That I had this like fantasy of dating, because I was 19, I had this fantasy of like dating a man with loads of money. But in the end, I was like, actually, I can't do this. I need to be my own person and choose where I want to eat my dinner.
Why else would a 40-year-old date a 19-year-old? Because anybody older would tell them to get fucked.
Yeah. Tea.
I think this goes out to gay, straight, cis, trans. I am very, very... mindful of particularly men dating very young partners.
Yeah. I don't judge much, but I don't judge much, but I do judge that. Which maybe I shouldn't. It's not always insidious, but I think a lot of the time.
I mean, because I'm in a glass house here because Max is 10 years younger than me, but he was 26 when we met, it's kind of like he was a grown-up, kind of.
Like, 19 is not... I mean, obviously, I thought I was at the time, but looking back on it now, it's one of those where you look back on it and you're like, ooh, that's...
Ooh. I was very similar. So I was a little bit older. In fact, I was 26. It was my 26th birthday. This is where I introduced a man. I won't say his name. He was a white South African. He was a cosmetic doctor. And he offered me Botox for my 26th birthday. Maybe he had a point. It can be preventative. But anyway, that aside, he came with me to Charles Street in Brighton to meet all my friends. And he was a very handsome man with a beautiful body. Looked a bit like John Barrowman, pre-scandal.
It's so funny. That's exactly what was in my head before you said
And all through the night, while all my friends danced and drank and celebrated my birthday, he sat in the bar wearing sound protectors, earplugs.
No.
Because the music hurt his ears.
Oh, I mean, just go home. Like... Do you know what I mean? Oh, no, I hate that. I really hate that.
He's like, well, it almost felt like he didn't want to hear my friends.
Yeah.
It's kind of what that said to me. I believe that was the last date, basically. So.
And this is what I thought with Petrovsky, like his behaviour at that dinner, that would have been it for me. I would have been
100%.
Like, see you later, fuck off, you're rude to my friends, that's it. That's the...
And I wish, I really, really wish that's what Miranda had said to Carrie, which is he didn't even try. There is a reason we don't like him. He didn't even try. That's twice now. He ignored them when they pitched up at his house. I accept that was on Carrie. That one was on Carrie.
Yeah.
But he was rude-ish to them then. And this night, he was wild to Steve. You know, when Steve innocently asked about Billy Joel, who, I'm sorry, somebody who was in New York in the 1970s and 80s has fucking heard of Billy Joel.
Come on. That is one thing. I didn't quite buy just how much of an arsehole he was. But I guess, again, it was necessary, like, for the plot. But I was like, why is he... Because he's always been, like, polite to, like, the first time he met Charlotte, he was very polite and gentlemanly. And then, but so I was like, why is he suddenly being an arsehole? But yeah, probably just to move things along. I loved the needle drop. Is that the phrase? When he suddenly just says like, oh, she's coming with me to live. And everyone's like, what? What the fuck?
Yeah. And then, again, if I'd have been Carrie, I would have been like, I think you've made a decision on my behalf there.
Yeah. And then the debrief on the bed is amazing.
Yeah. Without, again, Stanford is left out. No Stanford's allowed.
Yeah, weird. And then he comes in...
Why did he keep excluding Stanford?
He comes in right at the end, and then he's like, I can't pretend to be one of the boys any longer. And then you expect the conversation to carry on with him, and then it just cuts away. But
I would like to say this, and most of our listeners are women.
Yeah.
And I would like to say, you know, don't leave your gay friends out. If you have gay male friends, you know, it's a two-way street. If they are your confidant, you need to be a confidant for them as well. It does go both ways.
And if you're a gay man, don't leave your female friend in the club by herself and go home with someone.
We sit here as two people who have done that, Dylan. So again, so okay, I haven't done it since I was like 22. Okay, because I did it once and felt really bad, so I haven't done it again.
Yeah.
Or always go out with two female friends.
Yeah.
So they can amuse each other while you're having sex.
Yeah.
Next to a dumpster. Totally. Not that I've ever done that.
Any more about the dinner?
I mean, it's horrifying. So this is where we get to the question, in that Miranda and Samantha and Charlotte have lots of really good questions, kind of.
Oh, yeah, which,
the thing is, Petrovsky would have headed this out had he had an actual conversation with Carrie in the first place, because he needed really to set aside a night for them to discuss this and not spring it on her just before all her friends turn
up. Yeah, what the fuck, yeah.
Like, wild. And so Carrie takes their very valid questions to Petrovsky, and he does address them. But now this is where we should hopefully all of us be seeing another red flag, which is now kind of he's putting Carrie in, I believe, what's kind of called a position of financial abuse or financial control, where Carrie's future would basically entirely hinge on Petrovsky being the finance behind the operation.
And they're not, they're obviously not married. She's got nothing protecting her.
No prenup.
Yeah, I would pay for your apartment. That was the most ominous. And also trash, because that's
really... I have plenty of money. What I do not have is plenty of Carrie Bradshaw.
It's also, it's trash rich people behaviour as well, just paying
love-bombing.
And also just paying for an empty property and just leaving it empty.
Garbage. Red flags. So then we get the first drama, let's give everybody an Emmy, when she goes back to brunch and she answers their questions.
Great
scene. And then she has a little tiny tantrum, doesn't she?
Yeah, great scene. And I just love, it's not too extreme, but I just love the, friendship tension, when you can tell things are a bit tense. Very meta Miranda saying, you're all about New York. You can't leave New York. New York is you. And when Carrie's just very quickly when Samantha or someone's but we are happy for you, and Carrie's like, then stop killing it with questions. And then
Charlotte, she snaps out of all people.
And then everyone's,
I thought, in this scene, and actually throughout, was how wonderful Samantha, again, Kim Cattrall, so good. Kim Cattrall, she's got that kind of thing where she does what she knows she has to do, because I think maybe perhaps Samantha knows that you can only learn by making your own mistakes. You can't talk someone out of making a mistake. And so while we, of course, see that Samantha's heart is breaking, of course she doesn't want Carrie to leave New York, but the words that come out of her mouth are nothing but supportive.
Yeah, and it's when they're in the, are they in like a bookshop, or they're in some sort of, Carrie's buying a Duolingo CD.
Oh yeah.
they're in the language book section of the bookshop.
Mm-hmm.
And Samantha's like, you do what you want to do. It's very Samantha, isn't it? She's like,
yeah,
who cares what anyone else thinks? Ultimately, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors. I do slightly disagree with her there, because she's essentially, it's when Carrie's voicing concerns about Miranda, and then Samantha's essentially is like, who cares what Miranda thinks? And I'm a bit like, it kind of does matter what your friends think about your partner.
It's so hard. So hard. I mean, I've told the story on this podcast before about what happened nearly 20 years ago, when essentially a group of me and my friends, for want of a better phrase, staged an intervention for a man that we thought was in a fairly abusive relationship. Spoiler, he was. But the only thing that we broke up that night was our friendship.
Of course.
Because he knew that we had seen too much, and that we were almost like a magnifying glass up against his relationship.
Yeah, that he
and
didn't.
So he couldn't be near us. He couldn't be near us because we were the magnifying glass.
Yeah, yeah. Oof. But I think I remember you saying, like, since it has, he's come back and been like, oh my God, you were right.
Yes. Yeah. Many years. The friendship is still not there. We don't see him regularly. But yes, no, we did a couple of years ago. We had a really lovely coffee where he broke down how horrendous that relationship really was. But no, we didn't get back to where we were, look at it that way. And I probably never will.
I'm a bit of a coward with it. In fact, again, I've talked about in many ways how I'm Samantha in various ways. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little bit her in that I think I sometimes I'm very like live and let live. Mm-hmm. And do what you want and find your own way. But I think there are times when I should have been more, I need to sometimes put my foot down a bit, and you need to know when to do that. And I think I'm slightly cowardly with that. I think I'm very afraid to kind of tell anyone what to do about anything. So sometimes even if I suspect something might be wrong, I'm a bit like, oh, it's fine. You know, figure it out. You'll be all right. But yeah, it's important sometimes, I think, to be firm.
It's really hard. You can't. You never know what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, given that you use your friends as an opportunity to moan, so sometimes it can be quite dangerous. You can get an impression that somebody's relationship is very doom and gloom, because when your friends come to you, it's because they just want a good moan.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, rarely,
so you're not seeing the good stuff.
Rarely are you going to go on to your friends about, like, well, sometimes you might, but yeah, I think you're more likely to talk about the problems in your relationship than be like, oh yeah, and it's amazing, and we cook lovely dinners, and blah, blah, blah. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So sometimes you're getting a slightly one-way picture. But I think a lot of people say this when it comes to women's charities and domestic violence charities, which is what you don't want to do is isolate. Mm. Because what Petrovsky did here is he gave Carrie an ultimatum. The worst thing that Miranda and Samantha could have done is give her a different ultimatum.
Yeah.
I think more important is that you just always keep a constant, even if somebody starts to pull away, you keep that channel of communication open.
Keep the door open.
So they know that you're still there for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's perhaps what Samantha's doing, which is, you know, we will support you wherever you go, because when you have to come back to us, we'll still be here. You know, we're not going to fall out about this, because she might need us.
Yeah. On a different note, her look at brunch was possibly her biggest fashion miss for me.
Which one?
Like the Samantha. Animal print with like the hat.
Oh, yeah.
No, bad.
Bad. I'll tell you who does look amazing though. Carrie Bradshaw. Her hair,
oh my
is
God,
the best it has ever been.
And we've said that a few times.
I think there's a lot of fake hair in there. I think there's a lot of inserts. Her hair is like fucking dynasty big at this point.
We've said that a couple of times this season, so it's clear it's just getting better and better. I noticed as well she's wearing another big sort of Russian opulent necklace as well. She's mm-hmm. been wearing a few of those since she met Petrovsky.
She's in her Romanovs era.
Yeah.
Living the fantasy. Let's take a break there, because we're talking about hair and we have so much more to talk about. We're going to carry on talking about Carrie and France after the break. So stick with us and we'll be back in a minute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, welcome back. Splat, in fact, splat, as we launch into the second half of this drama special on Sex and the City, season 6, episode 18. My God, we've barely scratched the surface. Enid's back!
She is.
Oh, Candice Bergen, we love you.
She's so good in this.
She's been in the news for something recently, but I can't think what.
So the news article is she did an interview with Vogue what it was really like to attend Truman Capote's Black and White Ball. Iconic.
Oh, okay.
Amazing. But yeah, she's amazing in this episode. So vulnerable. Like, and just mm-hmm. really give some vulnerability to that character. Like, one of those things in Sex and the City where it's like, that character is just a peripheral character. She's Carrie Bradshaw's sort of freelance boss.
Editor.
Yeah, editor. It's got no business being that good. But, like, she's amazing.
She's extraordinary. And do you know what? It's a really fine line to walk between reality and comedy. And I think she nails it. Like, when we last saw her, I think, was in season 5 when she's at Carrie's book launch and when she skulks away seeing her married lover at Carrie's launch.
Yeah, I remember kind that,
of,
yeah.
Like an insane person, kind of giving Miss Congeniality vibes, kind of. Whereas tonight she kind of does it again in that kind of... She sort of walks this line between kind of like frosty and unhinged really well.
It's when they're at dinner or lunch or whatever, and she obviously asks. So she asks Carrie. She invites Carrie to this party she's throwing, and then asks her to with the caveat that she brings a suitable man for Enid,
a single man.
And then she like does this sideways look and says one of my favourite lines of the episode, which is, please never mention this conversation to anyone at Condé Nast.
Amazing. And I thought that there have been times when I was writing for Glamour, I had to go into Condé Nast and I always sort of think, oh my God, don't say anything about Enid Frick. I love that. I love the Dorada conversation. Carrie, do you even want the Dorada?
Yeah.
The very large fish that you have to be in a pair to eat.
Yeah.
But then any sympathy we might have for Enid is dispelled with the very libel line, I got you a job, you get me a man.
I know. But I love it because you can see Carrie be a bit like, okay.
She doesn't need Petrovsky. She's going to sue Condé Nast and be so fucking rich.
Yeah, she's recording in a... Well, actually, no, I was going to say she's recording on her phone, but that wasn't possible.
But
then.
She wouldn't know how to do that, would she?
So. Yeah, she doesn't even know whether her phone's going to work in France, so...
Yeah, does my phone work in France? So Enid sets Carrie like an impossible ask. But it's okay, though, because she gets Wallace Shawn from
Gossip Girl.
Clueless and Gossip Girl.
The Good Wife. He's great.
Oh,
he's
just, he is character actor for days.
Yeah, yeah.
What a legend.
He's been in a bunch of movies as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is going to have some sort of warm feeling towards Wallace Shawn. Like, do you know, we need more character actors. Where are all the character actors?
I can't really think of any young ones.
And even the character actors who start out at character actors like Jonah Hill get on a Zempic and become leading men.
I guess maybe who's the great one who was on SNL? Who wrote the Not In Front Of My Godson sketch.
Oh, that guy, not Bowen Yang.
Yeah, Bowen Yang. He's kind
of character. Love.
Is he a character actor? Yeah,
I think that counts. Comedians, it often falls to comedians to be character actors. I'm sorry, you're not hot enough to be a leading man or woman, so you best try to be funny. you could also have like the Cecily Strongs and kind of, in fact, a lot of the SNL cast kind of fulfill.
Oh, and
but then even if you look at somebody like fucking Maya Rudolph or Kristen Wiig, again, they have to fulfill that dual role of kind of like bombshell and comic relief.
Yeah, true, actually. Yeah, because, I know what you mean. Megan Stalter as well.
Yeah. She's notable ugly person, Kristen Wiig.
No, don't.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so Wallace, so let's move forward, or we'll be talking about 7 hours. So we get to the party.
Yes.
Carrie, by this point, is quite fucked off with her mates, but she still hasn't decided, because Petrovsky comes to pick her up and he's like, are you coming? And then he really sets her the ultimatum when she says, I haven't decided yet, with her new teeth. She's like, I haven't decided yet, teeth. And but then they go to the party where they take Food Critic, whose name I've forgotten, because he's just in my head, he's just Wallace Shawn.
Oh, fuck. I had his name, and I delete my notes as we go. I had his name, and I just deleted
it. Well, that was stupid, wasn't it, Dylan? Keep that in, Martin, to teach him a lesson.
Martin Grable is the Food Critic's name.
Oh, Martin, okay. our producer is also Martin, to clear up any confusion with that last section.
She calls him a hobbit.
He is quite little.
He is small.
I like really tall men.
He is
so
small.
I understand.
And then she literally slides in on Petrovsky. And
she's welcome to him. God, Carrie, just let Enid have him.
It's when she's like, oh, Carrie, why aren't I with him? And Carrie's like, because I am. But then again, quite a swing from like unhinged to vulnerable. When she realises what she's doing and she's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, but men can date anyone at any age, and we're left with, like, the pool. There's some analogy about a pool, a pond. She's like,
the dating pool, the tiny, the shrinking, evaporating dating pool. And she has a point.
Yeah.
It would have been cool to do more. And I still don't think I'm Just Like That has properly addressed this. Which is, what is a single woman in her 50s to do when all the single men in their 50s are interested in women in their 30s?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think there was an opportunity to do that with Seema, but that was not the story they were interested to tell with Seema's character at all. It's a difficult one, and it's a really interesting plot that isn't really given the space to breathe because there's so much else going on around it. And of course, Enid, and why she's so wonderful is because she's kind of vocalizing without filter. You know, why does Enid Frick need a filter?
Mm.
But yeah, it does kind of come across as mad. Like, oh, Carrie, why aren't I with him?
Mm.
And Carrie just sort of stands there, like looking, just kind of like.
I mean, you would be shocked. Like, if someone said that to me, I'd be a bit like,
Enid, what are you doing? Although that's kind of cunty. Enid would have been quite within her rights to say, I'm having a conversation with the artist Alexander Petrovsky about his career.
Yeah.
Calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is he allowed to talk to women?
Other women.
Like, yeah, but sadly, that is not what Enid says. She, in fact, says, oh, Carrie, why aren't I with him?
And then, like, sort of neck-snappingly fast, like the blizzard coming down outside, we're hit by Lexi Featherstone. Who comes, like, stumbling over a sofa and says, Carrie Bradshaw, where the fuck have
Carrie
you been hiding?
Carrie fucking Bradshaw. it's another character actor. It's Kristen Johnson, everyone. She is in three scenes. Oh. What three scenes there?
Kind of.
Just imagine sort of cementing your place in fandom for eternity on the strength of three scenes.
Yeah, and she's she's Carrie's friend from Carrie's like party days, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And does the character kind of serve as maybe like an ominous, like, quote unquote? I mean, she's amazing, but I think at the time it was perhaps supposed to be an ominous window into like what could have been for Carrie, perhaps.
Oh, 100%. And on this viewing with a more analytical head, I wondered for the first time, does the fear of turning into Lexi Featherstone prompt Carrie to make the decision that she does that night, which is, oh, God, if I stay in New York and single, I'm looking at my future, kind of.
But she's amazing. And just like, this is how everyone wants to act inside. Like, I think of her every time I'm at like a stuffy party, or every time I'm in a social situation where I feel like I don't belong, or like I feel like I'm the quote unquote like alternative one or whatever. I just want to run around, like, smoke cigarettes inside and call everyone a fucking geriatric.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I never become more Yorkshire or working class when I'm at events like that.
Right.
Sort of strange breed of Lexi Featherstone. There is that sort of, she's not wrong. It's a dreadful party.
Oh yeah, so pretentious.
What has Carrie become? Like, what has Carrie Bradshaw become? And let's not forget, in season two, Carrie was Lexi Featherstone.
Yeah.
Where she goes to that party with Big, where everybody has their jeweled purses.
That's very
she
true.
She ends up outside with Jeremiah, the cater waiter.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Exactly, yeah.
That's so true, yeah.
I don't know if maybe we've thought about that more than the creators of Sex and the City have. But I think you could draw a line from those two scenes. Was it where that stick figure says to Carrie, no, sweetie, no coloured liquids
no
inside.
No brown drinks or something, isn't it?
She's now the brown drink woman.
Oh, God, that's true. It's all come full circle. And then, obviously, everyone knows this brutal... Lexi, while proclaiming that New York is over, while she's smoking by the window, trips on her heel, falls out of the window, and dies.
with the going out line, "I'm so bored, I could die."
And then Carrie's voiceover saying it was the first time Lexi had ever left a party early. just brutal.
But it's a zinger. Don't deny her a zinger.
But I think I was quite open-mouthed watching it back. And I think this is why it's gone down in history, is because it's treated, her death is treated as in a very kind of like flippant way by everyone else. It's a bit like, oh, lol, like she fell out of a window and it's like she's dead.
Doesn't Charlotte at some point say, "It's a tragedy, she died, come on guys," I think on the way to the funeral. However, I do have a bone to pick with this set piece. I cannot fathom a universe where from the 18th floor, you would be able to open a window that wide.
That's true.
I just, health and safety found rotting in that building. There would be a guardrail, or the window would have one of those locks that you often get in hotels.
Yeah, like, why would you have that? That's a very good point. I found a really good quote from Kristen Johnston in an interview with Vulture. And it was
excellent. An
article by Nisha Gopalan dedicated to this episode. It was called An Oral History of Splat.
Nice.
And Kristen Johnston says, about this episode, "I was a little trepidatious. I wasn't looking great. I was bloated and not fit. I'd just been doing theatre and eating late night burgers and drinking a lot. I thought everyone was going to make fun of me. And I had to do it in that Versace fucking dress. Sex in the City was when the fat lady sang for me. I was a red wino and pill addict. And I almost died. Remember that time I was scary skinny? That's what happened. I wasn't anorexic. My stomach blew open." This is wild, this quote. Then she says, "They hired a stunt woman for the fall, but I got there and I was like, no, I'm doing it. There was a giant pad right under the window. So I hate to burst everyone's bubbles, but I fell maybe a foot." I did the take 4 or 5 times, and I did the New York is over speech probably 30 times. Having Sarah Jessica Parker laughed at everything I said, pumped it up too. I kept checking with her, saying, "Is it too much?" And she said, "No, it's perfect."
Aww.
Lovely.
So she was saying at the time that she filmed that she was very unwell in terms of kind of substance abuse.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. Which is kind of like, it's quite strange, given that she's playing that character as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting.
I wonder because the scene, the perhaps the most cringe scene is where Carrie finds her doing coke by herself in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And Carrie is a little bit judgy.
Well, I do love I love her. I don't love Carrie, but I love Lexi when Carrie's like, "Wow, do people still do coke?" And Lexi's like, "No, unfortunately," and then does a line of coke. Amazing stuff.
Oh, Carrie.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Lexi goes out the window, splat.
Yeah.
Splat the headline.
I know.
I didn't even, the British press would do that. Maybe they would. I don't know. Lexi goes out the window and then the snow falls. Winter, truly, winter is here. Winter has arrived in New York.
Yeah.
And they go to her snowy funeral.
Yeah.
All very well dressed up. You know, again, Carrie, in a very meta way, lamenting on how she used to be someone. But then, of course, we get to the moment, which was the fight between Miranda and Carrie, which is a phenomenal scene with two actors just excelling at their art. And it's really hard to know what to think in that situation where, you know, Carrie, in perhaps, I think, the most sort of knowing line in all 6 years of Sex and the City, "I cannot stay in New York and be single for you. I can write about my life or I can go to Paris and live my life."
I almost wished they had gone, do you remember she breaks the fourth wall a few times in season one? I almost wish she had broken the fourth wall just for that line, like looked at the camera.
But at the same time that she's saying that, and she's 100% right, we as an audience have seen those red flags that Miranda has seen. Now, you know, does Miranda screaming down the street, "You're living in a fantasy!" Like, is that helpful? No.
No. But understandable. Like, Miranda's just, like, really struggling with... She doesn't want to lose her best friend. And she does say... What does she say? She says, "Carrie, come on." Like, she wants to, like, make things up with her. But she also... Because it's Miranda, and Miranda is stubborn and does stick to her guns, she can't let it go. But in the end...
She says, just say it. You don't like him. Fine, I don't like him.
Yeah, that's it. That was great. And then, of course, after... And then a great cut. Right after she yells, "You're living in a fantasy," we cut to a horse-drawn sleigh through Central Park. Which, I mean, I think once and for all, signposts to us that, yes, Miranda's right.
But great stuff. Even though, we are Miranda, we don't want Carrie. We, by this point, they're actively trying to make us hate Petrovsky. It's good old-fashioned dramatic tension.
Yeah.
You know, we're going into a six-year series finale. You know, it's what's going to happen. So,
And I just love it as well because it's that real, like, the characters are feeling the same thing that the viewers are feeling, which is, like, we don't want it to end, but it has to end. And that's just genius. That's great.
And Carrie's question about should we stop questioning... This is something for us to discuss there, how much, you know, in I think a lot of us, and especially in the age of social media and just the kind of the lives we live online, we do spend a lot of time kind of second guessing and sort of censoring ourselves, you know, kind of especially, you know, the world is on fire, guys. It is a fucking bin fire. And we live in this constant state of should I think that, should I say that, what's gonna happen, kind of, especially if you have a career like we do where we are literally putting our opinions out there for people to listen to, you know, how useful is questioning? Are we kind of killing it with questions, as Carrie says? What do you think?
It's interesting that you drew that from it, because I thought similar things. It's two sides of the same coin, isn't it? Because we need to keep questioning, because if we didn't question anything, we'd all just sit inside and watch Sex and the City, which is nice.
Do you think maybe we could all benefit to be more spontaneous? Is that what Carrie's getting at, which is, should we all just be more spontaneous?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because yes, that is a good message, but it's ultimately it's what fucks her over. Like, she shouldn't be being this spontaneous.
I am one of the least spontaneous people in the world, so I think I'm in a very... I do not think I can comment on this. I am a Miranda, obviously. You're more spontaneous than me.
Yeah, and I have done very spontaneous things to this level actually, but when I was much younger, certainly. Not something I'd be doing in my mid to late 30s, which Carrie is now. So I guess it's about getting a balance, isn't it, perhaps?
Yeah, I think... I do, I see what Carrie says, and I think I could benefit from being more spontaneous, actually. I think... because a lot of the time the reason I'm not spontaneous is because of my crippling anxieties. So I think actually, you know, there is...
Which is valid. You know. That's valid.
Yeah.
I loved the foreshadowing when she, well, it's not really foreshadowing, but when she's listening to her little Duolingo, what was it called? I can't remember those CDs. Rosetta Stone, was it?
Rosetta Stone, yeah.
When she was listening to her French through her earphones as she's walking down the road, you hear it say, "Voulez-vous aller au Paris?" would you like to go to Paris?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Good deep dive there, Dylan.
Thank you.
You're welcome. yeah, so Carrie, in the end, ultimately, she's going yeah. to Paris. Oh, God, Dylan, I can't believe next week we've reached the end.
I know, and it is symbolic, even though there is more So I Got to Thinking to come. This is the end, I think, that we envisaged, wasn't it, when we first started?
Well, we always knew the films.
We are still
planning to do something fun for the films.
Absolutely, yeah. So watch this space for that. Mm-hmm.
But it's almost bringing back how sad I felt when it ended.
Yeah,
you know, because we didn't know there were going to be films.
No,
they're kind of. So it's just here we go. Yeah, next week we're off to Paris, you guys.
I loved it when Joel was on ages ago and he was asking about, like, he was a bit confused about, like, the reboot and the films and stuff.
Mm.
And you were like, he was like, were there three films? And you were like, no, there were just two. And he was like, oh, just the two films. Just the two films and a reboot. Yeah. and a three-season reboot. We haven't done Charlotte.
Let's finish on a positive note, which is Charlotte slut shames her dog.
I can't look at
you. With the words at her trampy babies.
Elizabeth, mummy can't look at you right now.
Oh, poor Elizabeth. She got raped. And now she's having children of rape. Why didn't they realise? Why didn't Harry and Charlotte realise that after she got gangbanged in the park, she might be pregnant? Why were they surprised?
I love
also
it.
Also, shout out to the pet shop worker who is amazing.
Oh, yeah. He's
She's pregnant! And everybody pregnant. Knows the face I just
yeah.
made.
And I love it when Harry's like, it's not like she planned it. She's a dog. And then Charlotte's like, exactly. She doesn't even need to plan it. She can just have them whenever she wants. Silly.
I'm going to say, Charlotte, I love you. I don't think this is about you.
No.
I don't think Elizabeth Taylor got pregnant to spite Charlotte's infertility.
That
would be quite a move if Elizabeth Taylor had.
Elizabeth Taylor.
I'll show that barren bitch.
Elizabeth Taylor is the precursor to Lily.
Yeah, wow.
The spiritual precursor. But yeah, I guess it's like the conclusion, quite a silly conclusion, but like the conclusion of Charlotte like coming to terms with her sort of issues with, you know, having kids, maybe.
Because she is a mother. That's the point it makes, which is when you have a pet, and we've had some bad news about Prince this week. My little dog Prince is a bit poorly. He's got a little suspicious lump on his leg that we're having to have biopsied.
Mm.
And, you know, I've been caring for him all week and changing his little dressing and giving him little extra treats, because it is like you're a mum when you have a pet.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so in the end, as mad as Charlotte is with Elizabeth Taylor, she's there to deliver her little babies and then cuddle them.
What was I going to say? Oh, I've got a few messages. I know we've gone quite...
Oh, love messages.
It feels like we've got... We haven't actually gone that long, but it's just because so much happened this episode that I feel like we've been recording for like 2 hours. So they are all about New York and Brooklyn. Do you remember we said?
Ah, lovely. Yes, we were talking about gentrification, yes.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. And about, like, would the taxi not take Miranda?
Yeah.
So we have Auburn... Hello from Queens.
Hi.
They say, I just listened to Denial, Friend or Foe, and your convo on cabs not going to Brooklyn. I'd say the scene is tied to the time period and not a universal experience, but definitely not impossible. The practice of refusing destinations is illegal, but still widespread and often tinged with racism. It's especially common when traveling to lower income neighborhoods, which usually overlap with black and brown neighborhoods. Where drivers assume they'll be less likely to pick up an immediate return fare and make money on the drive back. Interesting. Mm. When I first moved to NYC in the mid-2000s, I was dating someone in Upper Manhattan, another predominantly POC area. I often had cabs refuse to go there. I relied on off-licence car services to get home because there weren't many taxis waiting in the area. Love your show and so glad to have you back.
Thank you. Thanks for having us back in your ears.
And then we have Elisa. Hello, huge fan of you guys. Just listened to your last episode about your JFK journey. So this is about you going from...
oh God, you're needing a poo, the KFC poo.
From the airport, yeah. And if you were on the L, I'm pretty sure you got off at the Myrtle Wyckoff stop. It gets super crowded and chaotic over there.
I don't think I was on the L. I think I was on a J train.
Oh, the J.
I think.
But anyway, she says, used to live there back in 2019. And it wasn't too bad. There is also a Starbucks in that area now for next time you've got an emergency.
Do you know, that is the kind of advice I need. But I was staying way downtown. They put me in a hotel, like in the financial district. I don't know why. And so I was miles from New York. So I think I might have even been on an A train. Let me have a little look. I'm going to do some Googling. A train route, NYC. Okay, here we go. Oh, I think it was this one. Okay, the place where I did my poopy was Nostrand Avenue.
Okay.
I'm sure, I'm absolutely sure it was. Yeah, so if you get off at Nostrand Avenue, I think you will find a KFC where
else.
I will do a little poo.
And then we have one more from... Mech. Lots of, in fact, we've got lots of messages, but I'm only going to read out three. But we've got lots of listeners, okay. Lots of listeners in New York, which is cool.
Love that for us.
Yeah. So this is from Meg, Brooklynite, former Manhattanite, and New Yorker since 2001 here, with a Brooklyn neighborhood lesson re Miranda. The likeliest neighborhoods for her and Steve would have been Fort Greene or Park Slope, both of which were already fairly desirable. Park Slope, in particular, in 2003. But still affordable by today's standards. A brownstone in Fort Greene at the time would have been about 750k. Now it would go for 3 million.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah, in the condition in which Stephen Miranda bought it. Williamsburg doesn't really have the brownstone architecture you see in the episode. And Greenpoint would have been considered way too far off the beaten path at the time.
Right.
Also, cab-wise, it was very much a thing for cabs to refuse to take you to Brooklyn. In the early noughties. It was technically illegal, as our other listener said, but cab drivers still refused all the time, worried they wouldn't get a fare back. It doesn't happen anymore, but you still get the occasional grumpy driver.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much, listeners, because actually Dylan and I, while we've both been to New York many times, neither of us have lived there.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate your... on the ground tips. And you're right, actually, I've stayed in Williamsburg, and that's more a lot of like converted warehouse like stuff. My friends lived in like a converted trendy warehouse.
Oh, like brick lofts, yeah, and things.
Exposed to brick and fire escapes and really,
yeah,
nice, yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, there you go.
Cool. Right. Okay. Well, please, listeners, do join us next week as we
board
L'Avion.
Yeah.
And we travel to Paris for La Boulangerie et le Gâteau.
Screaming at the Eiffel Tower.
Is it next week we meet both Petrovsky's daughter and ex-wife, or is it just miserable fucking Chloe next week?
It's definitely Chloe. It is Idris.
Yeah, we meet Chloe. Chain-smirking cunty Chloe.
Idris.
Where was her spin-off? I'm interested in her spin-off. Idris, just Idris, is the name of the spin-off.
Chloe in New York should be the sequel.
Oh my God, yeah, Chloe. I mean, it's like the sister series to Emily in
Paris.
And
she just hates, she hates everything. She hates all of it.
Yeah. These yellow cabs, like butter on wheels. Idris.
It is just like Idris. A bee.
Oh my God. Right, so yeah, next week Dylan and I will be performing in role as Chloe. So yeah, brace yourselves. Until then, have a nice week and we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.